Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
The rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hey, hey, hoo-ha, welcome into the Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday. It's Nitpick Tuesday. I don't know what there is to nitpick when you're in an AFC championship game, but
plenty.
I'm sure we're going to find something. John Rook, Eric Scalavino from PFW here for the opening hour. Eric Friends from Boston.com will join us in hour number two here for the Tuesday program. I kind of am going to follow up here, at least to start with, Eric, based on what the guys were just talking about at the end of PFW. I really, you know, every week, and sometimes I often get accused in this program of being the naysayer, of being, the negative Nancy, as you have been in the past, of being the portrayer of doom, of trying to emphasize the negative as, before you accentuate the positive, which really is the whole basic premise of Nitpick Tuesday, as we all know, because New Englanders love to complain. I've long made the analogy, and I think it's appropriate, that New Englanders have nitpicked largely on Tuesdays ever since the Revolutionary War of 1776. Should have had the Redcoats back in 74. You know, something. I'm just, you know, we just do that. We do that better than any other region in the country. And New England fans, especially Patriots fans, I would also give a close second to Red Sox fans, we do it better than any other fandom in the country.
Why do you think?
I think it's because we have established traditions that if it doesn't go the way that, you know, we in our own minds foresee it going, we get upset. And then even when we win, if it doesn't go the way that we see it, we still complain. Based on that, I don't know why else other than that, I think there's a real succinct and intense sense of internal pride, regional pride in this area in being the quote-unquote Patriot, you know, back to the very founding of this country. And I just think that our sports teams, our sports fans have kind of picked up on that over the years and have embodied that very premise. And here we are. I think this is partly why, you know, New England fans complain as long and as loudly as any group of fans in the country. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they whine, because we know who the whiners are. We know where they're located, generally speaking. Heard a little bit of that, you know, from Baltimore in the last, you know, few days as well. And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. But in all honesty, I really believe that in New England, there's a demand for perfection. And largely the professional teams have done real well with it. I mean, 8 championships since the turn of the century. That's pretty good when you consider all the professional teams along the way. 8 championships. In the New England Revolution, our own version of the Buffalo Bills. They're now 0-5 in the MLS Cup game. But that notwithstanding.
They made it that far, though.
They've made it that far. That notwithstanding, I just kind of feel that that's where Patriot fans are, and that's why Nitpick Tuesday has been a staple of Patriots Playbook and Patriots.com Radio ever since we signed on back in 2001. It's just been, you know, that kind of a habit, and it's been that kind of a tradition. And because of that, you know, and I also believe to some of this, and I understand why that, you know, myself and you on occasion get the criticism that we do for being negative. It's because we, you know, most everybody that listens is a fan. Fan, of course, is short for fanatic. I've gone through this explanation many times, probably 2 or 3 times a year I go through this explanation, and probably bears repeating now as we're one step away from the Super Bowl, which is exactly where everybody thought we would be. So I'm not really surprising anybody with this. But because there is such a demand for excellence, and because the teams largely rise, you know, we get fans listening and contributing to the websites and doing all this kind of stuff that are just mailing it in. They say, oh, we're going to win. And like the last couple of weeks, you know, and this last week's a great example. I had 2 people out of the literally hundreds of score predictions that we got. 2 people picked Baltimore. 2. Now, that may or may not seem like a fair number, a right number,
Patriot
a wrong
fans?
Number. Patriot fans actually picked Baltimore. Most of the scores were in the, say, 42 to maybe 17 range in scoring, or 38 to 17. In other words, it wasn't a close game. So I'm not sure what delusional planet most of the fans are on, with the exception of, I will say, you're a fan. And you can't see the forest for the trees. So all we do here on the program is to try to sort of plow through that forest and give you a chance to see the game, give you a chance to see the opposition, give you a chance to see your own team, warts and all. So that way, in the aftermath, you can say, oh, yeah, I remember when he was talking about that, or, oh, yeah, I remember when they pointed out that on the show, or, oh, yeah, I knew this, I just didn't want to pay attention to it.
And what good does it do the listening audience if all we say is, oh, yeah, they're great, everything's great all the time?
Well, that's the whole idea behind talk radio, and you know that. The premise is to bring up a contrarian point of view, to have a debate on that point of view. If we were all in agreement, oh, yeah, the Patriots are going to kick ass, it's going to be 48-7, what kind of a talk show would we have? Would it be very entertaining?
No.
We'd all be sitting here, we'd be agreeing, we'd be slapping each other on the back, and it'd be one big, like I'd like to say, hoo-ha fest.
But,
and that's not what we're going to have.
But it's not being contrarian just for the sake of it. It's looking at things objectively, without the fanaticism.
Well, that's what we try to do. Now, we try to look at things objectively, but in order to look objectively, we have to go to the other side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way, you see the negative, you see the positive, and hopefully your, and I'm talking about our audience, your point of view then comes right down the middle. That's what we aim for every week here on the program, every week. We try to be objective, but in order to be objective, sometimes we got to go to the dark side. That's all. That's all it is. And so this week is going to be really hard to stay completely objective when, you know, the Colts came in and they upset Denver. And, of course, Denver's completely cleaned house now. And we'll end up talking about some of that, I'm sure, at some point in time today. And, in fact, we're watching John Elway on NFL Network right now at their, quote-unquote, season-ending press conference. And, you know, John Fox is out. He's told all the assistant coaches, well, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. You know, you're free to look for jobs.
Did that take you by surprise?
A little. Last week in talking to, Kevin, who was it that we had last week from Broncos.com on? I mean, not it was Broncos.com,
Ravens.
It was Ravens.com.
And Ryan Mink?
Yes, it was Ryan Mink. And Ryan actually said on the program, he said, I wouldn't be surprised if John Fox was on, you know, on shaky ground. He said that during the show.
Oh.
So, I mean, we kind of are, you know, and a couple of weeks before that, our own Mike Rodak, or our own former Mike Rodak, who's the Bills reporter for ESPN.
He's still ours.
He also, well, we claim him. As long as he's accurate, we claim him.
Right.
He also claimed that he didn't think Doug Marrone was long for Buffalo. Bingo, guess what happened? Marrone walked. Mm-hmm. So we actually bring you some insight here that you're not getting anyplace else. In the webosphere, on television, in the atmosphere, in the stratosphere, you're not getting anywhere else. That's 2 weeks in a row now we've had predictions that have been spot on with two of the biggest stories in the NFL. It's come right here in the playbook. And I'm not tooting my own horn. It's just the people that we bring into the program to give you a different point of view have been right on with it. I'm a little surprised that he is gone. I understand why they made the change, because they've had, you know, a lack of success. At least by their standards in the postseason, and in Denver, their standards are high like ours are.
Can I make a prediction?
Sure.
Who their next coach is going to be?
I think I know where you're going with this, but yes.
Gary Kubiak.
I agree with that 110%.
And my rationale for it is Kubiak was Elway's backup quarterback for pretty much their entire careers.
And wasn't he also offensive coordinator?
He was offensive coordinator there for a little bit.
Yeah.
He's got obviously the familiarity. The man hiring him is the guy he used to back up, and I think it just makes perfect sense.
I also think it's the only chance that Peyton Manning stays. I think, like you, believe that Peyton Manning will decide to call it quits. That's just a prediction.
I hope
he does,
for his own sake.
Well, that's kind of the way that I feel about
it. His reputation.
I kind of feel about that, because his reputation is still very high. It is still one of the all-time greats.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what you feel about Tom Brady, Manning deserves to be right up there in the same conversation. I just feel like if he hangs around another year or two in an effort to get that second ring, which may prove to be all too elusive, that he's going to turn into Brett Favre the second.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody really wants that.
No. No. I think he'd do himself a severe injustice if he hung on longer, went to another team, and tried to recreate the success that he's had. I think it's time.
The only thing that I will add is that if Kubiak is the next Denver coach, if he is talked to and they do interview him and they bring him in and they decide to work together, I think that's the only chance that Peyton comes back, because I think he would probably like the offense under Kubiak.
Maybe. But at least he'd be staying put. He wouldn't be trying to go somewhere else and start all over again like Favre did. Favre went to the Jets. He went to the Vikings. I mean, he was all over the place.
I'm drawing a blank. Where was Kubiak this year?
He was the
It was the OC where?
The Ravens.
He was the Ravens offensive coordinator.
God, yeah, we just saw him. Hello.
I was just going to say.
Duh.
You threw me off there for a second. I'm like, wait a minute. He was
we just saw
here.
Him. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. I don't know why. I just completely drew a blank on it. My apologies. Yeah, we just saw him. And I think we saw he had a hell of a game plan against New England.
Yeah.
He did. Joe Flacco now gets my utmost respect after what I saw this past Saturday. I think Joe Flacco's worked himself into top five category in the NFL and in terms of quarterbacks. Based on what I saw, I think Flacco deserves to be there. He almost single-handedly pitched his team to a win. The only thing that kept him from that was Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. But I think Flacco deserves to be there. I think Baltimore try to hang on to Kubiak if they can, but I think if Elway comes calling, he's gone. And I think he feels like he still has something to prove after the whole Houston thing happened.
I think he wants to be a head coach. I don't think he wants to be a coordinator.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be a head coach, and I think his boy Elway will give him the opportunity to do so again.
I think he might.
And I think the people in Denver would welcome that.
I think they would,
he
too.
He was a well-liked backup. Mm-hmm. He was a well-liked coordinator when he was there. I think mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense. He's going to be the new Broncos coach, I predict.
All right, so there you go. Just some food for thought here, at least, to open up the program. I'd really like to know, in addition to your nitpicks, and we're going to get to plenty of these throughout the course of the program today, but I'd really like to know on a couple of fronts. Number one, is Joe Flacco elevated in your eyes in terms of his ability to quarterback based on what you saw the Ravens do this weekend against the Patriots? And number two, should Peyton Manning be done? Is he done in your estimation? Should he try to come back, depending on the coach, depending on, you know, what, or, you know, do you kind of feel like Eric and I do, and you just hate to see another Brett Favre situation go? Just a couple of things that, you know, are out there today in NFL land that we'd love to get your thoughts on. There are several ways, of course, you can get hold of us here in the program. 855-PATS-500. 855-728-7500 is the toll-free telephone number. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. @JRBroadcaster, the Twitter. I'm four away from 2,800. Got to get there.
That's it?
That's it. Four away. Come on. Put me over the top. If you put me over the top and I stay over the top on your pick, then I might send you a little something-something.
Payola.
I know. It's the only way to go.
I don't know if I'd want a little something-something from Junior Broadcaster.
I didn't say what something-something.
Oh.
John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the spelling of the last name, on Facebook. I've had a ton of new Facebook friends join in the last couple of weeks since the playoffs got started. I'm very grateful for that. It's really wonderful to hook
You're
up.
You're killing
with
it on the FB.
I'm totally killing it on FB. So thank you. And if you have not submitted the friend request on Facebook, just keep in mind that it is my personal page. So I ask you to keep it clean, and I ask you to put up with all the other, you know, stuff that I got going on in my life. But we talk football quite a bit during the show, whether you post or you chat during the show or even off hours. It's good stuff. So there are many different ways to get a hold of us here on the program. Let's begin then, at least. The phone lines are jammed, but I want to lead into our phone callers today, Eric, by just saying that I thought that the Patriots' defense overall was a bit of a surprising disappointment.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's a big general nitpick to start with, mm-hmm. but I thought the game plan was ill-conceived, and I thought the performance was ill-executed.
Yeah, they came out with a zone coverage and got picked apart in that first drive, and I thought, well, okay, it's a few plays. It was only like a five-play drive. I thought, okay, they tried it out. They saw what happened. they're not going to come back and do that again in the second drive. And they did exactly the same thing on the second drive. They got picked apart again. And I was, I was mystified. I didn't expect them to play that poorly and not to adjust.
What in the world would give them the idea behind really coming out zone like they did? I'm trying to figure that one out.
I don't know.
I really am trying to figure that one out. I don't know what the thinking
was. I thought
they
had good matchups.
They had great matchups. And we've seen what a team, what this team does in man situations,
yeah,
especially in the back seven.
Yeah.
And so the zone coverage really confused me. And I'm just like,
and they mixed it up.
Why?
They did
they
play.
They did. They
but,
did. But coming out like they
yeah.
did, and five plays, 71 yards in the opening
yeah.
drive? Come
no,
on.
No.
Really?
They were falling for that play-action bootleg play too, and that's a Kubiak not an invention, but that's one of his
trademarks. They played right into Gary Kubiak's
hands.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, that's just in my thought, and I wrote about this today in the column, View from Above column. They overthought it.
Mm-hmm.
They overthought it. They just completely and totally overthought it.
Yep.
And I think that's the worst mistake that you can make.
Mm-hmm.
Just lean back and play football. Deal with your strengths. You know what your strengths are. Go to them.
Yeah.
Try not to outthink the other guy. And
yeah.
they did. And it almost cost them.
Yeah. We talked about the Justin Forsett touchdown
that
was wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And we on the other show, we talked about how Jamie Collins was supposed to be the responsible player there
mm-hmm.
on defense, and Kamar Aiken was running a crossing route right in front of Collins. So he tried to do two things at once. He tried to help out on Aiken
and leave, and in
the process took himself completely out of his own responsibility
mm-hmm.
instead of just saying, I trust that my teammate has got
to do his job. Yeah.
And I'm going to go do mine.
They didn't follow the mantra.
No.
Do your job. They didn't do it.
No.
They didn't do it.
Not on that play.
No.
That was one example of why I thought there was a surprising the way they played. And also, keep harping on it, they didn't get any pressure on Flacco.
None. And that's disturbing
and
for this week.
And any quarterback who can stand back in a pocket and look at all of his checks is going to eventually find an open guy. And
of course.
And frankly,
that's part of the reason why I have the respect for Flacco that I do, because he stood back there tall. He's got a great arm. He's got good deep accuracy, and he burned the Patriots.
Yeah,
he even made Darrell Revis look somewhat human,
mm-hmm.
especially in the first half with a couple of those throws to Steve Smith.
Yeah, I know. The touchdown to Smith though was a little bit behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Revis almost got to make the play.
He did, but Smith made a hell of a catch.
Smith made a great catch. Yeah.
So. See, we do have some things to nitpick today. And
plenty.
Yes, we got tons of things that this team.
No running game.
Oh, well, that was another joke.
I mean,
and in all honesty, it doesn't surprise me, especially in the light of Brian Stork going down and his, shall we say, questionable availability for this next week.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be stunned if he was playing, because I'm sure they'll try to get him ready for a potential Super Bowl
I'll
run.
Hold out hope that if they can get through this week without him, that
he would get a week off and then he could play.
He'll be able to play
in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but that does not bode well for this week. And anybody who thinks that 42-20, like it happened in early November in Indianapolis, is going to happen, you're thinking completely wrong, and you're thinking with your fan pom pom and not your smart pom pom, because. Number one, the offensive line is different. Number two, yes, I realize they're playing at home and not in Indianapolis, but the game plan is going to have to be different because you don't have the offensive line in front of you, and we don't even know if you're going to have Jonas Gray in front of you. Now, I know Shane Vereen got knocked around a little bit in the game on Saturday as well. We're not sure what his availability would be.
No,
but,
I mean, it could – well, but I don't think he got anything
serious
happen to him. But this could be a LeGarrette Blount opportunity. He's – produced in the playoffs for this team before and against the Colts last year,
right.
Actually. So whether it's Gray or Blount, I don't think it matters, but they have to run more and be more effective running than they were this weekend.
They have to. And I think part of the way that you're going to make sure that the Colts don't pull the massive upset here is by keeping the ball out of Andrew Luck's hands. And when he does have it, you want to make him one-dimensional and you want him to throw the football because you know he's always good for a mistake or two. That's just the way he is,
wow.
And I think the Colts are used to that, and I think the Colts are willing to live and or die with that. And I don't think you want Boom Heron dictating tempo and pace.
God, no.
I mean, seriously, You want Boom Heron to be the reason that you lost a game? Well, that's what will happen if you don't control the ball and keep it away from a guy like Andrew Luck, who's capable of doing it himself. And we know what T.Y. Hilton and Reggie Wayne can do. We know what they can do. So, they had a good game back in November, throwing to the tight ends as well, as I recall.
They did. Hey, I'm trying to think back, too, in that game. Yeah, they did.
So, all I'm going to say is
but that I think part of that was because of the way they had schemed to
probably
take
and they
away.
Were, they were going to make the tight end beat them,
yeah.
Which may still be the way to go.
Maybe.
It may still be the way to go. But I don't want Boom Heron all of a sudden, you know, jumping into the secondary like we saw Justin Forsett do this last week and, you know, go for 130 bills against the Patriot defense. Because, if Boom Heron rushes for 120 yards against New England, Patriots are losing the game.
Yeah, they can't let him run.
That's my prediction.
They can't let him do that.
That's my prediction.
Especially
they will
not
lose.
Ohio State already won the national championship.
Yeah, they can't let that happen. They can't. Yeah, I know. That would make everybody sick, wouldn't it? There's a little too much.
Oregon's here.
Little too much Ohio State. Yeah, I know.
I mean, I love the fact that it was a playoff, though. I love that.
I know.
Your hometown was hosting.
Yes, I know. Well, Arlington.
Basically.
Arlington.
No, but
down the street.
The media was like down in Fort Worth.
Fort Worth, yeah. You know, which is just right around the corner
from
where I grew
up.
That's correct. That's right. And actually, I did live in Arlington for a spell. My parents lived in Arlington while I was attending college in Austin.
Oh, yeah?
So whenever I would have to go home, you know, then I would end up going to Arlington, which is roughly about 5 minutes from the stadium.
Yeah. Dallas and Fort Worth, it's sort of in the middle.
Technically, it's in Tarrant County, the same county, but it's right in between Dallas and Fort Worth. Yes, that's where it is.
That was cool to see.
Yeah,
it was cool to see the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think it went very
game
well.
Game was kind of anticlimactic.
The game was anticlimactic. It was supposed to be Oregon blowing them out.
Yes,
I don't know what happened though.
Oregon, we saw, didn't really have a defense.
No,
and we saw Ohio State do what? Control both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah,
and. Listen, when it comes right down to it, if you control the line of scrimmage, you're going to control the game.
Generally.
And that's a problem for the Patriots this weekend against the Colts.
Yeah.
That's the one area that I can see that the Patriots can stub their toe and the Colts can stay in the game and steal one. You look at it on paper, there's just no way that the Colts should win this game. I agree with that. I'm already leaning toward, you know, the Patriots by, you know, probably double digits, but... Again, as I said at the tail end of PFW, if the Patriots turn the ball over two or three times, make a mistake in the kicking game, you know, botch a field goal, give Indianapolis a short field, listen, those things add up. And if the Colts can get, you know, 17 to 21 to 24 relatively easy points that, you know, they might not otherwise get, and they're putting up, you know, say 30 plus, okay, they can take it. And they can win it, but I think it'll probably take that. I think the Colts would have to be 30-plus to win the game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the Patriots would have to play a terrible game.
Right. Right.
And I think after the scare this week, I don't think that happens.
Let's hope that that is worked out this week because it was an ill-conceived and ill-executed game plan defensively against Baltimore. Eldridge in North Carolina, you lead us off today here in the playbook. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John. Hey, Eric. How y'all doing?
Good, buddy.
All right.
Good. Hey, John, Eric, don't change, man. Don't change. Don't be a pom-pom like Paul and Andy.
Okay? What? Pom-pom waivers like Paul and Andy.
Now, me, I'm a straight fan, and I love my boys. Like I said, I talk more noise than the law allows. And even when I play online, I got my Patriots. I don't do like everybody else, jump with the best team. I got my team.
Okay.
So I'll do the negative and the bad point.
All right.
And when they was talking about 10% or 15% for the Colts, if they play off like they played Denver, because they took a page out of Seattle on Denver, we're going to have some problems, especially with their front line. I don't know if y'all saw the game or not, but I saw Manning under a lot of duress.
He was.
And I think he got sacked once or twice.
Yeah.
And we got a bad O-line. So, and everybody, if they say they can recreate that.
And Brady was under duress the whole game against Baltimore.
He got hammered in the first half.
He did a good job of
avoiding
it.
But in the first half, I thought he was going to get decapitated.
Only two sacks, and they were those back-to-back ones.
Yeah.
But
he got hit a lot after the pass, too.
He did. But, I mean, I give enough credit to the O-line that they were able to only surrender two sacks. And part of that goes to Brady for being able to get out of the jams.
And my only question is, okay, we went and got two free agents, you know, like linebackers, like Ayers and Casillas, that helped out during the regular season, you know, but you don't see him in the playoff at one time, and you ain't getting no pressure. You know, I know everybody said, well, Chandler Jones back. I ain't seen Chandler Jones do Dolly Whit for 3 years. I ain't seen him do nothing for 3 years at worth. A sucker, what did we get, a first-round, a second-round form?
He was a first-round pick. He was the first of two first-round picks.
That's a first-round bust.
Yeah, he's not a bust.
I wouldn't call him a bust. I would call him a solid player that we keep waiting for more, and the more hasn't come yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask you something, Fred? Excuse me, John and Eric. If a rookie can hold him like that, and Eric go against all pros and got a couple sacks against what? Rodgers and some more quarterback, and he can't get past a rookie? You still going to think that?
Yeah, I still think that.
Okay. Well, y'all got good expectations, high hopes than I got. Because I'm like, man, he had 3 years. I mean, he got 3 years. Yeah, he put consistency, he tried, but a couple of times he had a hand in the face, and the face mask, I don't see why they didn't call it. And one time he got held that I saw. But other than that, man, it was a non-factor. And when they ran at him, it was a non-factor. When they ran at Harris made the tackle when he was in there. I just don't understand why they don't use fellas that got you there. You know, and keep using them. And then I know you got your number one pick, your all pros and all that. But if they're coming off injury and they're not doing as better as the guy that's playing, something wrong with that philosophy. Because you want to play your best 53, right? Or your best 22?
Yeah.
So if my best 22 is a free agent to come on and then in my first round, mm-hmm. I'm playing my free agent.
Okay.
I'm playing my free agent because mm-hmm. that's going to get the pressure. But if we run it, I hope we do. And it's still decent for the Colts. Like I said, they got man up on DT, JT, and everybody else, and they played them physical. They're doing it with us. They're going to have to make Brady hold the ball a little longer. And if that line rush or put a little pressure, we might be in a little trouble. But I still say we win, though. But it ain't going to be as easy. It ain't going to be as blowing away like everybody say it is.
Not everybody's saying it's going to be a blowout.
Not this time around.
No,
not
it's
this
not.
Time around.
I don't think
you
so. They'll win, but it won't be a blowout.
Yes, sir. And on Fred's behalf, I believe exactly what Fred said, you know, on Seattle and whatever. If we was to make them face them, I know that's another topic for another week.
Save it for another week. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves.
All right. Well, y'all have a good day. I'm in Florida, and I got to pick up this load, and y'all be good.
Nice, Eldridge. Right. Enjoy the weather, my friend. Here is Toso in Lincoln, Rhode Island. Hey, Toso.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you?
Good. All right, so I just got 2 points to talk about.
Go.
First of all, that was a great game. One of the craziest games I've ever seen. And I feel like our biggest problem, yes, our O-line is bad. I mean, I wouldn't even say bad. They weren't as good as you'd expected them to. But, I mean, they only kept Tom Brady to the 2 sacks, so that's pretty much a clean game overall, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like our worst points in that game was our linebacking core because the flats were open all day. The touchdown at the end of the half, and then that last touchdown that was a missed touchdown that they end up converting the field goal on. Those are right down the middle. I think Dante Hightower is covering that tight end.
Owen Daniels,
our linebackers really need to get better in coverage because every time we go into a game, I feel like the middle of our offense, I mean our defense is wide open. The flats, like almost fourth down, like they were wide open. Like no one was even over there. Like it was crazy. What do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, they did. They didn't have their best defensive effort, and they gave up a lot of plays on that. I mentioned at the top of the show, they gave up a lot of plays in the, the bootleg
mm-hmm.
pass that Kubiak likes to call.
Right.
And Hightower, you're right. Hightower was guarding Owen Daniels at that end of the half pass, and give credit to Flacco. He threw a great ball in between three defenders.
True.
It was a gutsy play to make, and Owen and Daniels made it. Hightower didn't. They didn't play their best game on defense, which it was a surprise, but it gives me a little bit of hope that when they have games like that, they tend to respond positively. Like in Green Bay, they didn't play their best. They responded the next week in San Diego. You know what I mean? They tend to do that, I think. And that's why I feel confident about adjustments being made this week against the Colts.
Yeah, I definitely have hope that they're going to fix it and get better. But that's what I felt like was the main concern. Like, you can't let that happen. And then the second point I wanted you guys to talk about was I didn't really listen to PFW today because I was actually busy with work and stuff. But
shame on you.
I try to get to it. I'm going to get to it later on today.
Where are your priorities? What are you worried about work for? Good Lord. And we're on the air. Nothing else matters.
Yeah, we're talking about almost a Super Bowl here. So, I mean, come on. What is more important than that?
Exactly. Hey, man, I was actually looking at my clock like, damn, man, I'm missing my PFW right now.
I'm just messing with you.
But listen to this. I feel like Peyton Manning lost so much credibility with that, right after the game. It was like immediately after the game they want to put out that report. He had a torn quad or whatever was wrong with his quad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that was the worst, make an excuse for your terrible performance.
Oh, that happens.
I would never
to a lot of
Brady
players
or anyone do that.
No, that's happened to Brady plenty of times.
It has.
There have been plenty of times when they've exited and it's been, he was dealing with this or that. That's the case with a lot of guys who exit the playoffs early.
First of all, they don't want you to know what's ailing them before the game because they don't want teams targeting. That's the number one reason.
And if they lose, they're anxious to say there was a reason
why we lost, and there was a reason why I'm not 100%. It was this, but I can't tell you that before the game because we don't want the other team to know. So there is a reason behind it. I don't think they look at it so much as an excuse for poor performance. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. It's really more of a reason.
The only question you should bring up there is, why was Peyton Manning not on the injury report?
That's an issue that teams, I think, could take up with the NFL and say, hey, are the Broncos, are they reporting properly?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we know the Patriots have been hammered for this in the past, so how come Denver
wasn't
hammered?
And everybody's known that he's been hurt for about a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, I remember a month ago them talking about him being injured.
But it didn't look like a quad. It looked like he got hit like on the side of the back or whatever. I mean, you remember the play from that game. So that's the only thing. I mean, everybody knew he was hurt. It was just a matter of what was bothering him. But you should also, if a guy is hurt, should be on the injury report.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't that even make it worse? Because it's like what I said. Yes, we all knew a month ago, yes, he was hurt. And his game was hindered from that. But then they made it to the playoffs. They finished off the season. Mm-hmm. Before the game, even people knew he was hurt, but they were still saying, the Broncos are going to go in. They should beat the Colts. There's not going to be no mm-hmm. problem whatsoever. You see him throwing 10 yards in front of the receiver, everything going crazy. He looks horrible. It looks like it's basically his arm or his age. And then now after the game, his quad was hurt, but it was strained. It was torn. It was this. It was that.
Age catches up with every athlete. And I think it's catching up with. I think it's catching up with Peyton. And John and I talked about it at the beginning. We don't want him to be the next Brett Favre.
Yeah.
He needs to realize that the end is very close and quit while you're ahead, while you still have your dignity. Don't do what Favre did and end up becoming a joke. He should just pack it up and go away.
All right, Tosso.
All right, John. All right, Eric. Have a good one.
All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Man.
Appreciate that.
The only caveat I would add to that, John, is if he does want to come back, he should go to Buffalo and play with Rex. That way the Patriots will have something to talk about twice a year.
Now, that would be awesome.
I'm kidding.
No, I like it, Eric. I like it. Yes. Peyton needs to go to Buffalo. Let's go, Peyton. Go be Rex Ryan's quarterback.
Jeez.
Then he can't complain anymore about, I didn't have a quarterback. You'd have Peyton Manning. How great would that be?
Man, oh man!
I think the ground would open up.
That idea out there.
I think the ground would open up and swallow us all whole.
The NFL would love that.
Oh, seriously, totally. Then you get two Brady, Mannings.
Brady Mannings a year.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man.
Well, I guess did Rex already hire his offensive coordinator? We'd have to look at that.
Yeah. His name is escaping me right now, but yes, I think he did.
Okay. Funny. We'll have to look at that. Miguel's in Oregon. Miguel, what happened to your quack attack last night?
Oh, man. Don't even remind me about it, John.
Sorry, buddy.
I actually thought it was going to be a close game, but we got our coach. That's it.
Yep.
I think we got our coach. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Urban Meyer. So
I would agree with you. I think Urban Meyer proved that he's one of the – he's certainly in the modern-day tense.
Yeah.
He's every bit as good as Nick Saban, if not better. Because nobody gave Ohio State a chance in this playoff. In fact, there are a lot of people that didn't think Ohio State even belonged in the playoff because of what happened to TCU, which is
why the playoff system is so great, because it just proves
it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's definitely a step in the right direction.
Is.
Yeah, he's a great recruiter, you know. So,
yeah.
But anyways, I wanted to start with my first of all saying that it was one of the best games I've seen Brady play. Just from the standpoint of taking the team on himself and like on his back, you know, without a running game. I'm just so glad I saw him play the way he did on Saturday. But with that being said, I wanted to say that my nitpick was actually that INT that he threw before the end of the half.
Bad throw.
That was not only a bad throw, but I was just thinking, you know, if we get a field goal here, we get the lead for the first time in the game. We go up 17-14. But, and oh, by the way, we get the ball in the second half with momentum, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it turns out a touchdown the other way before the end of the half, and that was a big killer. And I thought that was one of the worst things I could have done in that particular situation, you know?
Yep.
And, of course, the defense was pretty bad. As far as, like, looking ahead of the game, I think a running game is going to be way better against the Colts. I'm not worried about that. But
can't be much worse, 14 yards.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't think we're going to come out and have a game plan just for the running game like we did last game, because our offense now is playing a little better than it was when we played against the Colts. And I think we're actually going to beat the Colts, but I just don't like it how the PFW guys were pretty much saying they have not a puncher's chance. I mean, this is the National Football League, guys. Everybody plays, and everybody's going to show up, and I think anybody can win in any given Sunday. With that being said, I know the Patriots have a way better team. I just don't like the perception that you don't give a team a chance, but they beat Denver. I know Peyton had a really, really bad game. I watched that whole game, and I was surprised that some of those throws he was missing by a mile. And and I think that wasn't the Colts defense; it was more Peyton. Mm-hmm. But I think that defense played pretty decent, to where we shouldn't say they don't have a chance. You know,
we all
I think you're right, Miguel. I'm agreeing with you 100% on this.
We all know that anything can happen in the NFL.
And one of the things I've seen from the Colts, it's that out of all the bad things they do, they put points on the board.
They do.
So
they do.
That's all I wanted to say, John. Yeah. Thanks for my call.
Thanks, Miguel. Appreciate that. I think he's right on.
They haven't been able to the last three times that they've played. They haven't been able to put too many points on the board, the Colts, that they've played New England.
Against New England.
So I just think it's going to be tough for Andrew Luck to do this 2 weeks in a row, to come up. He's made great progress in his time as an NFL quarterback. They didn't make the playoffs this rookie year, correct?
I got to think back. Yes, correct. Yeah, you know, not in his rookie.
And then last year they made the playoffs,
won a
dramatic wild card game,
right,
and then got bounced here. Dramatic fashion the next week.
Correct.
This year, they win their wild card game
at home.
And
now they're in the AFC Championship. So they took a step.
Right. They go to the divisional round, and they win a big game. Mm-hmm. Not only a big game, but he exercised the ghost of
Peyton
his predecessor.
Manning. Yeah, he did.
In Indianapolis.
Good way to put it.
Huge game for him.
Yep.
And for the franchise.
Right.
It was a symbolic passing of the torch.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little much to ask him to do that a second week in a row, but to exercise the ghost of Tom Brady with the Colts and the Patriots and their history, maybe next year he makes that leap. I don't think he does it this year.
Another step.
Yeah.
Wondering what Nick Babylove thinks about Peyton Manning and whether or not he should just decide to hang it up. What do you think, Nick?
Hey, Casey Deitch, mio paisans. obviously, to start with, I got a comment about that because ESPN is still enabling him, and this is why I get a chip on my shoulder, and so does it my guy, number 12. Did you guys get your packages, you two?
We did. Thank you very much.
Yes, they arrived last week, I believe.
And Eric, and just to start with, John, you do bring, and I please both of you follow me on Twitter. I'm 3.5 weeks on Twitter, and everybody says I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, you see it. I think you're seeing it. You do bring an interesting dynamic, John, different from everybody else. And you know I love them at PFW, and Bob Soucy's my guy, et cetera, et cetera. You do bring a dynamic. I wonder if Eric ever knew how historic that interview about the animal thing and all that, if you said anything to Eric.
Not exactly just yet, just because we're kind of in the middle of the football season, but I'm sure there will be a time and a place for it.
Well, Eric, I got your back on that. Just follow me, you know what I mean?
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
As far as Manning, look, at the bottom line is I go by the stats and history. Brady right now is 19-8. Peyton Manning's 11-13. Do we have to have a conversation who is the best quarterback of this generation?
No. No, we don't.
You know, and then when we last talked, John, and like I said, I enjoy the dynamic and the diversity of the show. And I was telling you about Geno Smith's family and their quality people. And you said to me to predict the game, and then it ended up being a one-point game.
Mm-hmm.
And and maybe Eric doesn't know it, but Eric, I've never missed a game since they started in 1960. I'm very old school. I'm terrified of the Colts. Tell me that I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Eric, I'm like a quadruple Italian, man. I'm just a worrywart because I'm still suffering. I think we also talked about this, John. I'm still suffering from the pain of 2007 and 2011. And historically, correct me if I'm wrong again, if this kid, and he's younger than me, so I'm going to call him a kid, a son, my number 12 that I love with all my heart. If he gets ranked number 4, what conversation is there about that? Who's the greatest ever?
I don't think there's a conversation at this point anyway. I think Peyton has proved with all of his one-and-dones in the playoffs, with his only having won one Super Bowl.
He has great numbers. You can't deny
them. He has
great
regular season numbers.
He's an outstanding quarterback.
Terrible postseason
numbers.
He's
a Hall of Famer, but you can't put him above Tom Brady because he has lousy postseason numbers.
Yeah. Brady's just better in the games that count the most.
But you still see, like, this is why I can't – in other words, this is why I'm so loyal to Playbook and the whole situation there, and I'm doing my Myra Kraft thing, et cetera, et cetera. ESPN is still looking for – it just drives me crazy where they got it in for the Patriots.
Well, you're chirping to the wrong audience then, Nick. Honestly, you need to talk to the ESPN guys and ask them why they make the editorial decisions they do.
Yeah, I don't. My point is that I care about what's happening today. Yes, I wanted, as I told them earlier on PFW, I'm dying of malnutrition. I want it bad Sunday, and then we can think about, you know, how crazy I'm going to be, because this is historically significant. I mean, this is like a big deal. I just want to be able to talk, you know, for many, many years about Brady, because I want to, I still in my heart can't put him in the conversation with Montana until he crosses this bridge, and we can't get ahead of ourselves, and that's what's driving me crazy about Patriots Nation.
Well, then we'll continue, I think, on that conversation as well as, or as long as we can, until, you know, the Patriots, if they do progress to the Super Bowl and they win it and he gets his fourth, then we can kind of entertain that again. Until that point in time, we'll just have to table it, I think.
If they'd just beaten the Giants in 07, we wouldn't even
we wouldn't be having this conversation
right now.
And I'm sure that's part of the reason why Nick is a little sick over that. Melvin in Tennessee, you're in the Playbook. Hello, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Good, Melvin.
Man, as far as Manning retiring, I think he's just about, there was almost a millimeter of my heart that felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah,
it really did. I just felt he looked like he just didn't have it anymore. I think that was an eye-opener to me that he just, you know, normally he's going to hit on one of those throws. And it was crazy to me that I think he outplayed himself because you're not able to, you see what they were doing, but they didn't want to, like, really make an adjustment to me They just wanted to prove that he could still swing that ball out there. And
right.
They were giving him that pass.
Right.
But he just wouldn't change. Like Peyton, that you can't do it anymore, dude. Stop.
Right. The
Stop
end wrong. Is the end is oftentimes sudden and swift.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what we saw, I think, particularly mercifully so in just the second half of that game on Sunday.
Yeah, it's over, like I said. So pack it up. As far as our game goes, I love Tom Brady throughout that. I guarantee you that overall game, spectacular. It really was spectacular. I'm going to be very nitpicky. But with the last possession of the Chargers, of the Colts, I don't know if y'all talked about this, of course, of that game, mm-hmm. I have now, like, really been like, all right, you know, let's get out of here with the, it's like I'm almost expecting a turnover now. I get really, really, really nervous during that time. Because if you look at that, the linebacker left the zone and went with Gronk, whatever it does with the interception. Amendola was wide open underneath. Bloody, I mean, he was old. And he could, you know, it was the first and fifth. We could have got at least, 10, 15 yards probably after that play with a catch, with a short catch
mm-hmm.
and run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's scary to me that, do you think there's anything to be said with that, really, about Tom Brady, you know, with that situation? Is he just, because there's been some bad, that was probably more acceptable one, but that, you know, it's been some bad interceptions within that situation throughout this year.
Well, I'm not ready to like saying, all right, we're looking at, you know, his beginning of the end yet. We've seen that two or three times over the course of this single season. And every time he's managed to pick himself up and have an extraordinary performance soon thereafter. So until we don't see that again, it's really hard to start questioning that. It's very clear that within the next year or two, he is going to be in the same situation that we just saw Peyton Manning in. But we cross that bridge when we get to it. Right now, I don't think he is.
No, I don't think so right now.
I think that we have every reason to expect he'll come back and have a solid game this weekend against the Colts, especially with him being at home. I think Tom Brady's still got it. And I think that, we'll hold this conversation again for another day, probably in the next couple of years, but not right now, no.
Okay. I just thought it was, from a coincidence standpoint, it just seems so weird that he just has a, it seems like he has a mental block at the same aspect of the game, seems like.
I kind of get what you're saying there, Melvin. It's, you know, he's trying to make something happen, particularly late in the second quarter, try to squeeze one or punch one in there knowing they're going to get the first possession of the third quarter, and he makes a silly play.
Yeah, he does. And it's then one last point that I'll say. Eric, were you about to say something? I can hear you.
No, I was agreeing. With,
hello?
I was agreeing
he was just
John.
Agreeing.
Okay, no problem. One more thing I was going to say was, from a play calling standpoint, that of course this is I can be completely wrong with this. Okay, so we get down there to the 23 or whatever it is, and I think I was never I don't know if I was ever one of the people that wanted to scream run the ball, but it was a situation in the game. All right, Brady almost gets set. We get down to the 23. I'm also want to say with Green, first and 10, we almost take a sack. Brady throws it away, and we take a sack on the next play. It's about a loss of 7. We're at the 30-yard line. Okay.
Right.
Would you have called a little bit safer play in that situation than to be going for that? Because I feel like there was a lot of instances, even when we got the interception, that they just tried to chunk the ball, and it seems like that, you know, we could have maybe went back to a little, just a safer play. I don't know if it's a screen I was looking for. I don't know if it was a run. I expected to get something maybe to start the drive a little bit more basic. I don't know if they were going from a momentum standpoint, but definitely at that aspect, I'm at the 30-yard line. The one thing I don't want to do is turn the ball over or take another set because it really took them out of field goal range.
Right. Okay.
So what do y'all feel about that? Now let y'all go. But
he's talking about which play are you talking about now?
It was I want to say maybe it was 14-7. I want to say I know he scored anyway, but I just felt like during that series I was questioning maybe some of the play calls that were going because we threw the ball a lot. Right after the interception from
yeah,
40,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
He threw the ball consecutively, and then, you know, right after the
I
run,
did think, Melvin, yeah, I did think the play calling was
McCourty
peculiar.
McCourty interception was at 28-28.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, that was later in the game.
One was early, what I meant. The first one was early. The Vereen. The Vereen and then the back-to-back sacks. You know, that was right after, that was right.
Yes, that was second quarter.
Scuffle.
Yeah,
that's when the scuffle started.
Right, second quarter. I did think that the play calling was a little curious there. And for some reason, one way or the other, I think when they decided that they were going to completely do away with the run and throw the football on Baltimore, I think that's when the play calling got more consistent and more accurate. But I think it's because they were trying to still sort of feel their way around what Baltimore was showing them defensively, and I think they just kind of pussyfooted around too long on offense. I thought the play calling was poor in the first half, better in the second half. I'll agree with you there.
Okay. All right, now, I'll see y'all later.
Thanks, Melvin. Appreciate that. I know you gotta jump, right? All right, do we have time for your thing? We have time? We have a word?
We always do.
We need a word.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corncob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
All right, why don't you just simply overwhelm us with this one today?
I will do that. I plan on it. And I'm going to overwhelm you with how to spell this one, John.
Oh, God, here we go.
Synecdoche.
God bless you.
I'll say it again. Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
Mm-hmm. You don't even want to attempt to spell it, do you?
No. Here's my spelling. WTF.
It's S-Y-N-E-C.
S-Y-N-E-C.
D-O-C-H-E.
I couldn't repeat that. What the hell are you talking about?
A synecdoche it's a figure of speech or a phrase that takes something that is very inclusive and refers to something less inclusive, or vice versa.
Okay.
Here's an example.
Okay.
If you say, for instance, New England beat Baltimore this weekend.
Right.
We're not talking about the entire region of the six states. They didn't go and beat the city of Baltimore. We're talking about the New England Patriots beat Baltimore Ravens. Okay. So the term New England would be a synecdoche. In that case.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought you were going to say the term New England would be like a rash in Baltimore's groin area after the game is over.
No.
Okay.
No.
No?
Okay. But we do like to digress on the show, and we like to talk about things other than football.
Often.
I'd like to use the synecdoche in something very serious that's been going on around the world. Je suis Charlie.
Yeah. Right.
That would be a synecdoche for all of the peace and freedom of speech loving people in the world. The
agreed.
The Je suis Charlie phrase that has gone viral around the globe would be another example of a synecdoche.
Synecdoche. Mm-hmm. I can't pronounce it, but okay. I understand it. I understand it. All right, Big E. Way to go, kid.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
The start of AFC Championship Week madness here with the media. And
The madness actually begins in earnest tomorrow when the team gets back to practice.
And I'm proud to say, once again, our home city of Providence is the NFL's, the AFC's
headquarters,
official headquarters host city for the AFC Championship
Sweet.
Game.
I believe the Renaissance Hotel is where their headquarters are.
That's correct.
Right? Yes. Okay. Downtown Providence. Mm-hmm. There you go. So if you want to get in and, make sure you get out and, pick at the players as they arrive, then go right ahead. Renaissance it is. All right, Big E. Thanks, buddy.
All righty.
All right, let's get a break in here. We're going to get back to your phone call. So if you're on the line, you can hang for a bit. Please do so, because Eric Friends, Boston.com, is also coming up right here in the playbook.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's a Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of Patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on Patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
I mean this in all seriousness. Do we have favorite Patriot Playbook moments from years past?
Hell yeah.
Have we talked about this before?
We have.
Where was I?
Well, no, we talked about how you can basically, if there's like funny moments in the show, you can go back and get it whenever you want.
Okay, got it. Okay.
The beauty of on-demand television and radio these days.
Yes, that's true. And it's kind of on-demand here on Patriots.com, too. All right. And he's on-demand for us just about every Tuesday here on the program on Nitpick Tuesday. Eric Friends, who covers the Pats and the AFC East for Boston.com and also for Bleacher Report. He joined us here inside the playbook. Eric, how are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. Hope you had a nice vacation.
It was just okay. I had to work.
Okay.
I mean, we all had to work, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
But that's okay because that's kind of what we have to do at this time of year, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, this is the grind of it. This is why they play all year. This is why we do what we do all year. So.
This is absolutely the grind, and it will grind for perhaps, let's see, 1, 2, maybe 3 more weeks.
Could be.
All right, so let's start it off, though, with your impressions from Saturday. And I think we know that, the Patriots did not really kind of answer what we thought they could defensively. They were fortunate enough to have enough offense to overcome whatever defensive shortcomings they had. But really, is it too late in the year to be thinking that you can make changes for the better to help your team win a Super Bowl?
Interesting. I mean, I'm not sure what changes you're referring to.
Well, you clearly need some help defensively. You clearly need some help on the offensive side of the ball from the offensive line standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to go out and sign anybody this week. I would say they're probably done making those kind of moves.
Right.
But definitely, you know, they're going to have to do some shuffling up front, especially if Brian Thorpe is injured and out for any significant amount of time. I would say most likely they'll probably just go with what we saw from them when Stork went out of that game on Saturday, which is to have Ryan Lindell slide over to center, then have Josh Klein come in and play right guard, or possibly move Dan Connolly over to right guard and have Josh Klein play the left side. But either way, yeah, that they're going to have to figure that out, and that was, you know, that's kind of concerning because that was the trouble spot for them early in the season, and really when they solidified that group with Brian Stork and Dan Connolly and Ryan Lindell at guard, that really helped turn the tide for the offense overall, but specifically for the offensive line, and to not have Brian Stork is kind of a lot of fans are reasonably worried and rightfully so, and I would say, you know, you look at what they were able to do at the offensive tackle spot, I think that gives you some hope for the positive, because that group, I mean, the defensive ends for the Ravens, Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil, they're so talented that that you were almost expecting them to have their way with Nate Solder and Sebastian Fulmer, but those two guys held up really well.
Yeah, they did. So, you know, we've seen them have to make adjustments in the O-line all season long. You know that once you feel like you're solidified in your rotation and you got the right guys in the right slots, you know that that can also be broken up at any given moment when you have injuries come into play, and it looks like an injury did come into play here. You wish that you had a little bit, I don't know, better backup plan or rotation or what have you, but it is what it is, and I realize that's a well-worn cliche around here, but there really isn't a lot you can do here. I guess, though, the more so than the offensive line troubles that we've seen this team have to experience over the course of the year, defensively is a bit of the conundrum here because, frankly, this defense should be better than what we saw play, especially in the first half on Saturday.
Yeah, but, I mean, one thing to keep in mind there is that, you know, the Ravens hit them probably with some things that they weren't exactly expecting earlier on in the game. I think, you know, they had a lot of designed rollouts for Flacco and passes into the flat that kind of took advantage of the Patriots' coverages, and they adjusted. I think they adjusted really well, especially in the second half. I mean, really, you know, after that first touchdown drive in the first half, they were doing really well up until the touchdown at the end of the first half when they capitalized on the Brady interception, and then in the second half they had that first drive touchdown go against them. But after that they only gave up a field goal, and buckling down in the red zone in that spot I think was huge. But overall, just the fact that they only gave up 3 points basically almost in the entire second half of the game really helped them get back into the game. So. I think, you know, the defensive line getting gashed in the running game, not a good look for them, especially, you know, as we get down the stretch here. And, you know, the Colts aren't really a powerful running team, but you'll probably end up facing the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. So granted the Patriots get that far, they're going to have to figure out what to do in that run defense.
Yeah. Scalavino and I talked about this a little bit earlier. Boom Heron really shouldn't terrify you, but at the same time, if he gets 100, 120 yards, Patriots aren't going to win this game on Sunday. They can't afford to, you know, we'll deal with it later. This is the situation they have to shore up now, because you're right, Seattle most likely is the team that would be waiting on the other side, and we know what they can do when they pound the football.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's interesting because you kind of wonder what they can do. And like you were saying earlier, not really a whole lot right now. They've gotten pretty much everybody back they could ask to get back. Silver Salinga's back from the injury. You know, you have Chandler Jones's back from the injury. And really everybody's on the field, so they just got to figure it out.
And you've got no defensive pressure at all on Joe Flacco this last week. Is that a concern?
There was some pressure. I think it wasn't, you know, as consistent as you'd like. And, you know, when you have 45 pass attempts against you, it's hard to expect the defense to get pressure every single time. But really, you look at it, that most of the pressure that they got came from Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich. And from my perspective, I mean, I don't know how it looked on TV, but sitting up in the press box, I could make a case that either Chandler Jones or Rob Ninkovich or both were being held on just about every time they weren't getting after the quarterback. So I think those guys were playing relatively well. The interior pressure wasn't great. Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins did a pretty good job rushing up the gut through the A-gaps as linebackers as they usually do. But you would like to see a little bit more pressure. Flacco had a lot of time back there, especially in the first half. And I think, you know, and they didn't get any sacks, I don't think, at all on Joe Flacco. And I think as you go down the stretch here against a quarterback like Andrew Luck, they're going to have to find a way to generate some pressure. Typically speaking, when they play a lot, they've been sending extra guys on the pass rush. So it'll be interesting to see what they do this week.
Eric, I was looking over your website, and actually one of the things that kind of caught my eye was a piece on Boston.com from your contemporary Eric Wilbur on his blog, and the headline was "Nothing to Hate or Fear: The Colts Pose a Problem for Patriots Fans." I actually thought it was pretty well put, and kind of the centerpiece for where I was kind of leading into the conversation today for this entire week. Fact of the matter is that, you know, the Colts came through with an upset that few, I think, really expected to happen here. And so from a respect point of view, can the Colts grab the Patriots' attention well enough?
They already have it. I mean, let's not get it backwards here. I mean, this isn't a team that will sleep on any opponent. I mean, Belichick says that every time he takes the podium. I don't think we got any worry about that. And definitely, you know, just because they've beaten the Colts soundly in their past three games, I think they know this is a good team that won their division, that's been in the playoffs each of the past three seasons, has won multiple playoff games this year, won a playoff game last year. They're tested, and Andrew Luck is a good quarterback. I don't think there's any real chance of the Patriots sleeping on this team.
No, and frankly, I would think that just because of the way that the November game turned out, that in itself, even though it was a 22-point win, that in and of itself is going to grab their attention, because the Patriots are going to have to probably win this game, maybe. I don't want to say probably, maybe have to win this game differently than they did back in November. We're not sure, A, about the running game, which is basically non-existent this last week, and B, the Colts certainly look like a much better team defending said run since, you know, in the last 2 months.
Definitely. And one thing to look at here is, like you said, you know, the Patriots, they've had a lot of success running against the Colts. More than 220 yards rushing in each of the past two games. They've had a running back with at least four touchdowns in each of the past two games. So, really, you look at what the Patriots have been able to do offensively against the Colts, and you would expect that they're going to go in there and run the ball right down their throat. So you almost kind of wonder then, are the Patriots going to get into what they do a lot of times in the playoffs, which is they play this mental chess match with themselves sometimes, almost to the point where they end up getting themselves in trouble by overthinking the situation and, you know, out-coaching themselves in a way by getting away from the running game. I think you have to go into that game saying that you're going to run the ball on the Colts and you're going to force them to stop the run and you're going to force them to bring extra guys in the box, do whatever they have to do, or you're going to have them play the perfect fundamental game up front where they're all in their gaps, they're all playing sound, they're all playing with good technique, and they're able to stop the run. But I do think the Patriots, you know, you go into this game and you're saying the running game is where it starts for them. And if they're unable to get that off the ground, then you move it to the passing game.
Gotcha. Eric, before we get too much further here, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a little intrigue already existing here within the confines of the AFC East. And former Jets coach Rex Ryan now pitching a tent in Buffalo. Frankly, I love that. I'm glad. I've always liked Rex. I've even loved his personality. It used to rub me wrong. Now I get him a little bit more. Can he be successful in Buffalo?
Tough. It's going to be really tough. And I think there aren't really many worse situations that he could have picked for himself than Buffalo. you know, I kind of wonder, did he get amnesia sometime between when he got fired by the Jets and now when he's being hired by the Bills? Because exactly the circumstances that led to his firing in New York are exactly the circumstances that he is entering with the Bills, where he has a talented defense. They need to build the offense. They need to find a quarterback. That unit, I mean, they have some talent on the offensive side, but they need to build an offensive line. They need a quarterback. That is going to be a really tough challenge, I think, for them. You know, you're going to have to find a way to get a quarterback that's not through the draft, because they don't have a first-round pick to get a quarterback. There really aren't very many free agent available options. You have guys like Mark Sanchez, Ryan Mallett, Jake Walker, and Christian Ponder are really the cream of the crop here in the quarterback class for the free agency of this offseason. So you look at that, and I mean, it's going to be tough for them to make real strides forward, but they have the offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, coming in from the San Francisco 49ers, who I think if anybody can work with DJ Manuel and get the most out of him, run a similar style offense to what they ran at the San Francisco 49ers, that would be a good situation for him, too, because they have some running backs, C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, who can do some damage. And we know Rex Ryan loves the ground and pound, so he won't feel compelled to meddle in the offensive side as he may have felt with the Jets. But, again, I think Rex Ryan's track record of not being able to develop quarterbacks and of the offensive side really, you know, falling behind under his watch, you know, it's going to be tough. They're going to need to find a way to make sure that that unit can run autonomously without Ryan at the helm.
Mm-hmm. And a final one for you here. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a question that we've been asking fans at the top of the program here. Is Peyton Manning done? Should he be done?
Oh, well, I think it's really tough because, you know, on one hand, you look at what he was doing earlier in the season and you wonder, you know, you were beginning to wonder if he was ever going to run out of steam, and then down the stretch this year, just did not play very well, 4 touchdowns and 6 picks in his final 5 games, and really, you know, not playing up to his usual level. I'm going to say I think he should retire, if not at least leave the Broncos, because I think that organization is going down quick. You know, they are up against it with the salary cap. Their head coaching situation is now in flux. They've got a lot of free agents that are coming out for contracts, Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if those situations are all kind of weighing on the back of Peyton Manning's mind as he's thinking about all this. You know, when he comes back, is it going to be worth another grind of a year to come back to a situation where it's going to be almost all brand new? I mean, there could be some carryover in terms of the coaching staff if they're able to keep Adam Gase, but, I mean, he's going to have to come in and probably be working with one, maybe two new receivers. And he's going to be working under a new head coach with a new style. It'll be interesting. I think this would be the good time for him to hang it up. I'm not sure one more run is really what's in the cards for him.
How about, as Escal mentioned earlier, how about we get Manning to go to Buffalo and join Rex?
Oh, man, wouldn't that be something? That would just steal the headlines pretty much every season now, wouldn't it?
That'd be unbelievable. I think we'd all get blown away by that one.
Absolutely.
Eric, thanks, buddy. Appreciate the time today.
Thanks, John.
All right, talk to you soon. Eric Friends covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com, joining us here in the playbook. Okay, we got tons of phones here. I got tons of emails to get to. You guys have got the rest of the show. I'm going to start it off here with TJ in North Carolina, who says he's a Colts fan. Thanks for hanging on, TJ.
Yeah, no problem. How's John doing today?
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Long-time listener of the show, even though I'm a Colts fan. Actually, I'm out of Indiana, but that's okay.
Well, that's okay, and I'm glad you took the time to call today.
Yeah. Great show. I listen to PFW as well. But I wanted to comment on one thing that you guys haven't touched on, and it was pretty big. And you know, the Colts actually acquired this guy because of that playoff game last January. And he didn't play in the November game because he had a high ankle sprain. And that guy's Art Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that you guys have most of your viewers think that you're going to run for a lot, and you guys might very well do that.
I'm not so sure that we think that. I'm not so sure we think that after this last week, though, TJ, because we've seen, you know, we saw the offensive line struggle. There's certain uncertainty within the offensive line that it's completely healthy. My guess is that it'll have to be a different game plan, especially, and you bring up a very good point, especially with Jones and his presence in the middle being Wilforkian of a certain nature, that it's going to be a much more difficult task for the Patriots to run the ball, especially as they did back in November.
Yeah, I agree. And one other thing, you probably won't see a lot of Reggie Wayne in this game. I think his time in Indy is pretty much done, so... Mm-hmm. I think that the pass will see a lot of two tight end formations with Allen and Kleiner.
Mm-hmm.
On the outside, you'll see T.Y. Hilton and then the rookie Dante Moncrief.
Well, we know Kleiner had had some open opportunities in November, and I think that's because the Patriots sort of game planned to take the other guys out of the mix. It'll be interesting to see what they choose to do. I would agree with you this next week, and if that's the case again.
Well, look forward to the game. It's going to be a great one, but hopefully the Colts pull it out, but you guys have a good week, okay?
Thanks, TJ. Bye-bye. Appreciate your phone call. All right. Stay in North Carolina. Here's Liam up next in the playbook. Hey, Liam.
Hey, John. Hey, I've been listening to your show for a long time. I love it. You really are the voice of reason.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I appreciate that, but I sense a big butt is coming next.
No big butt. I just want to throw that out there. It's being Nitpick Tuesday. My nitpick from the game, which, a nitpick is a nitpick, was the kicking game. I talked to the guys in the post game, but then I did some looking, and the last few weeks it seems a little weak. I mean, normally he's got a strong leg and he can get it right through the end zone. I don't know if his game plan that way or what. But,
That's a great one, and frankly, it's one that I sort of avoided because I wasn't sure that it bothered me. But now that you bring it up, I certainly understand why you would bring that up, and I think I've got two reasons for it. Number one, the end of a long season, and I'm not so sure that there's going to be as much strength now as there might have been early in the year. And number two, cold weather tends to make the ball heavier, and it travels less. So all I can tell you is it's probably a little bit of both.
And it very well might be. But that was my of all the things that stood out in that game, that one thing stood out to me. That and the coverage on the kicking and the punts just seemed, it seemed like they let him get a lot of yards. Where, earlier in the season, we had a lot of good stops, especially after punts.
Yeah.
And again, it might be a factor of the cold. I don't know. But that was my nitpick.
I think it's a good one, and I think it's legitimate. I don't think it's a worry for the Patriots, but if this Sunday rolls around and we don't get any, touchbacks in the end zone, then and let's say the Colts end up with a couple of decent returns, and let's say they start, plus 30 yards away from their own end zone, then that could be a significant game plan factor. So it's something I think at least that bears watching, as the game unfolds this week.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Liam, thank you for the phone call. Thanks for the time. Let's go across the pond. Lars is in Sweden. Hello, Lars. You're in the playbook today.
Hello, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for taking the time, Lars. How are you today?
Good, good. I don't know if you remember the last year. I called you after they lost the AFC game with Denver.
Yep.
And I told you, see you next year for the AFC game, and here we are again.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm actually happy you brought that up because, we kind of sort of take that for granted around here, and I think it's understandable why fans would do that. But before this season got started, I think most everybody expected that this team would be right back here. In fact, most everybody still expects that the Patriots have one more to play, that anything short of getting to Phoenix in that final game is still going to put this season a little bit on the disappointing side, even though they're in a fourth straight AFC title game.
Well, no question. And, the offseason is very long, but the season goes by pretty fast, and then the intensity and the pressure keeps going up.
But, it does go by quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does go by quickly, but opportunities go by quickly too. That's what it means, also.
Sure, sure. So, what are your thoughts then on the game with the Ravens? Any nitpicks, and then the game upcoming with the Colts?
Well, I was able to watch the game. It was on a Saturday, and it was a great game because honestly, the AFC playoff games were a little boring these recent years.
yeah. Okay.
Even last year, I thought compared to the NFC playoff games, the NFC had much better games.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a great comeback. Tom Brady had an unbelievable game. And I would say two players that stood out for me, Gronk and Jamie Collins. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal player.
He's only getting better. He's only getting better. He's freakish with his athletic talents. I think the one thing that he needs to remember is that he's got to remember his assignment and stay within the confines of what his job is supposed to be. Kind of like the whole "do your job" mantra that's taken the Patriots and a lot of fans by storm here this year. When Collins does that, I think he's as good as an outside linebacker as you're going to find just about anywhere.
It's a shame that it was called back, but when I think it was Flacco's first fumble, he literally pulverized the offensive line, and gosh, I mean, he, anyway, I would like to ask you something.
Sure.
I don't know what Stork is. I'm hoping it's in Seattle Springs, so maybe he can come back if we win this Sunday. But who would you line up at right guard?
Well, first of all, it's not a complete and total fait accompli that he's not going to play on Sunday. I'm only going to surmise that if there is a question at all, that they'll hold him out in the hopes that they could have him back somewhat healthy, you know, for a potential Super Bowl game in a couple of weeks. So I would think that they would tend to err on the side of caution. If he is out, then, yeah, Wendell's going to come in and play center. I would favor Klein over Devy. I just don't think Devy's got it. And I understand why the Patriots took a chance on him. They, you know, here's a guy that, doesn't have a tremendous amount of football experience behind him. Found him as an undrafted free agent. Thought they could coach him up, you know, like they, you know, done in the past with some of their, you know, their street free agent guys. I don't know that he's ready to do that. Maybe if he continues to work and maybe if he spends some time on the practice squad or they keep him around next year. But I think Klein's probably the route to go. Now, if Cameron Fleming returns from the inactive list where he was this last week, I think it's possible that you see an adjustment there as well, and then that you'd be find less of Klein. You might find Fleming and or Marcus Cannon involved.
Okay, yeah, that sounds logical. And when you think about the other matchup, Green Bay at Seattle, number one defense versus probably the MVP of the year.
Well, I have to admit, my preseason Super Bowl prediction was New England and Green Bay. So I'm not going to waver from it. I, you know, it wouldn't surprise me clearly if Seattle won, because they seem to be hitting on all cylinders at the right time. But if Aaron Rodgers is able to, you know, do what he did, I think, this last week against the Cowboys and stay upright for the most part, avoid Seattle's rush, then I think Aaron Rodgers can give him a game. I think the Packers can give him a game. I think the Packers' defense has improved, and well, they might be able to hang with, you know, Seattle in offense a little bit. And I think, I think it's entirely possible that Green Bay figures out a way to do it. I think it'd take turnovers, and I think it'd take some poor play on Seattle's part. They should be favored, but I'm going to stay with my original prediction and stay with New England and Green Bay.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
Thank you, John, and see you next week, maybe.
You got it. Absolutely. Lars is in Sweden. Here is Dave in Connecticut. Hello, Dave. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Good, Dave.
Yeah, we'll start with the Peyton Manning conversation. It's a sad thing, but I'd like to see him, you know, hang him up.
Yeah.
I don't want to see, like, the AKA Brett Favre traveling circus.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, I absolutely follow you. I
don't want to see him tarnish anything that he's done.
Yeah, and I share your sentiment. I mentioned it earlier in the show with Eric, and if you didn't get a chance to hear that, my gut instinct is that he will decide to hang it up. That doesn't mean he will, but I have a feeling he will, because I think he probably feels similarly. You know, his legacy is a really, really good one. He's going to go down right now. He's a top five all-time guy. If he hangs on, that's not going to happen anymore.
It's going to drop.
Yeah.
It's going to drop.
Yeah.
You know, I have two nitpicks today.
Go.
And first of all, let me just jump on the guy who was talking about the kicking game.
Sure.
Now, I heard, I don't know if it was during the game or after the game. I don't know why we heard during the game, but that was their game plan. They were trying to short kick to Jacoby so he wouldn't kill him. And for the most part, they contained him. I mean, he had a couple of nice run backs.
Well, I can
really hurt him.
I can understand that maybe, but, I mean, you don't give him any chance to run if you kick it over his head.
You kick it over his head. I understand that, too. But, you know, he's one of those guys who's going to take it 9 yards back and build up that head of steam.
I see what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
So I think they didn't want to chance it with him. I think they wanted to, you know, kind of keep him in front of him with a short track.
Well, I think they did that. They largely did it anyway.
Yeah, they did a decent job there. Defensively, this game was amazing. I mean, to me, it was definitely gave me a couple of heart attacks. First of all, you know, kudos to the if you really ask me what this team is today, it is one tough, resilient team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to come back from not one but two 14-point deficits in this game shows me that there's no quit in this team. And that, regardless whether they won the game or not, I was very proud of that fact.
Yep.
Heck of a time for the defensive line to really pick one of the worst games of the year.
Well, they didn't do a good job of controlling the line of scrimmage, Dave, without a doubt. That's one of my biggest worries going into this week, because if you give the Colts...
I think it might have been the blocking scheme. They call it that cup lock scheme. I mean, because it seemed to me every other play, they were taking Wolfhard's legs out from him.
Well, you know what I mean? They do a lot of cut. They do cut blocking in Baltimore, just like they have done in Denver for years. And
right.
And I know that the Patriots were ready for that, but I think the Patriots were they started out zone, and I think everybody had an assigned area. And this is a team that's much more effective in man situations. And I don't know why right. they waited so late to kind of change up on it. They did mix and match later, but it almost cost them the game. And that's why I was kind of curious in terms of preparing for the game and in terms of the defensive game plan. It just didn't settle well with me at all, and that was one of my biggest nitpicks.
It is a nitpick. I mean, I'm gonna not to disrespect this kid Herring from Indianapolis.
Yep.
The kid Forsett has had a heck of a year, you know.
And well, the idea here is you don't want to give Boom Heron a heck of a year either.
Because I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
You know, they got to play. Well, I was listening to you earlier. You said that, you know, the running game, whether it's Gray, whether it is Mr. Blunt, we have to get that game going. It's going to be strong. It's going to be a balance. You know, we can't count on Pat Brady to win every game for us.
No, even though he can, perhaps, but
absolutely.
You want to here. I think you want to try to keep the ball away from Andrew Luck again, like you want to do with any team that has a high-powered offense or any team that has a high-powered quarterback. You want to keep the ball out of his hands.
The best way to stop him is to keep him off the field,
right?
And that's been one of the things that teams have tried to do. You know, the Patriots,
110%
off the field.
That's correct.
Because Tom Brady's not on the field, you know, he's not shooting the ball all over the place.
That's right.
Okay, you know, and I agree with you 100%. I think I've said it all season long, and I, you know, I'm really, like, flashing back. I haven't seen a 60-minute offensive game that they play this year that's been totally balanced. You know, I'm not saying it's going to be 30-30, okay? You know, but most of the games they play this year, it's either been the passing game or the running game. Not really a strong combination of the two.
Well, it's good that they've had options and choices, but you're right. And Tom Brady even spoke to that a little bit yesterday, and he did say we have to have more balance against Indianapolis for us to be ultimately successful. I couldn't agree more. He's absolutely right.
Absolutely. I think, you know, and defensively, it's the same thing. I think, you know, it was almost like two halves there. You know, Patricia changed it up. And that's what I also love about this team. Not many teams in the NFL have the personnel, the quality personnel, to be able to change a game plan halfway through and just make it like a different game altogether.
They are as good at adjusting as perhaps anybody in the league has been. I'm happy they made the adjustments. It clearly got them a win. The problem with that is, and thanks for the call, Dave, the problem with that is that the original game plan almost put them in a hole that they barely climbed out of. Trey in Memphis. Hello, Trey.
Hey, John, man. What's up, baby?
How are you?
How you doing?
Excellent.
Man, I'm doing well, man. It's cold here, man.
Yeah, I know. I don't like
a little bit of that. We get some of that Massachusetts weather, man.
Well, I don't like it either. You can have all of it. I need some of that Memphis sunshine.
I need to get it back, man.
I need some Memphis sunshine, and I need some Memphis barbecue.
Hey, well, you know what, man? I'm not going to message you about the barbecue on today, but I did have a great lunch today around 12. Awesome lunch today.
Okay.
I stopped at a barbecue stand. This guy got a little smoke. Smoke barbecue style.
Oh,
man,
you just
awesome.
You know,
awesome.
You know.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot for that. I really appreciate that, Trey.
Well, hey, John, this game was what you and I expected, as far as, you know, it being a nail biter.
Yeah.
And competitive, but
yeah,
being down 14 points twice was not what I expected. But I think, John, what happened, that interception made the game a lot. It was a game changer. It was a big momentum shift. You know, that pick by Tom Brady before halftime. And that was kind of a game changer. I mean, we lost points on this drive. So, but, you know, with that being said, John, I mean, I love the resiliency that this team showed. And, you know, I always go back to this gauntlet, man. This gauntlet that we had, you know, that seven-game stretch, it conditioned us for these type of situations, you know. It conditioned us for this game.
Right.
Because, you know, in the past, John, we've been all we used to hear this time of year is the soft schedule, you know, that the Patriots had. You know, they only beat one team, you know, with a winning record. So now you're not hearing this, you know, on SportsCenter and across, you know, throughout of these different sports talk radio shows.
That's true. But so, you know what? But that ultimately didn't matter much in that game, did it?
No, it really didn't. But I think, John, the passing game is going to be more effective this weekend, but I still expect us, you know, to keep them honest with the run game. I think we're going to have a solid day with the run, but at the end of the day, John, I think, you know, the passing game is going to play a big factor. And I want to say a lot of people have been hard on Amendola, John, but, you know, the fact that he's been getting his hands on the ball on special teams, you know, with punt and kickoff returns. I mean, you know, it allowed him to get in the rhythm and feel, you know, part of, you know, the game plan. So I think that, you know, he's going to do some good things. And I think Elderman and DeFed and Brandon LaFell is going to have a great game. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that there's a very good chance for that to happen. I like Indianapolis better defensively than they were a couple of months ago when you played them. So I think the Colts will make some things difficult for the Patriots.
Yeah.
I think like other teams, though, the Colts will have a difficult time with Rob Gronkowski, at least initially, which means that if they do decide to provide more help, as I suggested this last week, that should leave some opportunity for Julian Edelman and or Danny Amendola, and they both came up big against the Ravens, just like I thought that they had a chance to do. So I think it's going to boil down to, honestly, controlling the line of scrimmage. And
well, John, I got one more thing.
Okay.
I'm gonna let you go.
Sure.
I think the reason why the coach was so aggressive against Peyton Manning, I mean, they did the same as that game plan that the Cincinnati Bengals did. The Cincinnati Bengals recognized that it was going to be hard for Peyton Manning to get the ball outside the hash. And I knew, I mean, you can kind of tell that ball had no velocity on it, John. So,
yeah.
You know, I think the game, everybody's giving. I'm not taking anything away from the coach, John, but when you can look at Peyton, every pass he threw had no strength to it.
Right.
So I think that played a major part with the success of the coverage of the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm going to say this. They're going to face a quarterback in Tom Brady. Brady's not going to take them lightly. And one thing about it, you know, man, Brady's going to – he loves to rip that ball in the cold air.
He does.
All right, gentlemen, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Trey. Thanks for the phone call. Trey actually makes a good point there. You know, it won't quite be the same type of quarterback that really the Colts defense may be facing that they faced this last week. I think it's at least interesting to point that out. On Facebook, this is what we got on Facebook, at least thus far. Mary Beth says, John, not sure I can handle another game like last weekend. Talk about a roller coaster. I screamed, laughed, cried in that order. My neighbors were happy the game was early, and my family was glad I have a pacemaker already. Manning should be done so as not to ruin his legacy. Thank you, Mary Beth. Glad to hear that the pacemaker held out for you. Daryl says, John, Joe Flacco didn't disappoint. As difficult as it is to type, Flacco is a good quarterback. Did I just say that? Flacco is a good quarterback. Yep, top 10 in the league. He may be a little better than that right now, Daryl, at least in my estimation, based on what we saw this last weekend. He says his inconsistency precedes him. We saw regular season Brady and regular season Flacco this past weekend, and that was not our salvation. Nitpick is the defense as a whole, D-line in particular. Chandler Jones is a liability in run defense. He has consistently crashed inside, abandons outside containment. That's an excellent point, Daryl. We really haven't talked about that enough. But one of his weak points is against the run. For all the accolades we give him for being able to apply pressure in an offensive backfield, when he crashes inside, that's why you see a lot of times teams try to run at him. And you see the linebackers come over and support that because he abandons his containment. Says Akeem Ayers was phased out. WTF. On the back end, Brandon Browner was at his best on the sideline. Yeah, kind of like I thought he would be. We need better showing come Sunday if we hope to move on, despite how unfavorable the matchup seems to be for Indy. Kareem says, you have to admit Peyton has his stature, respect, and record. I hate to see him get out as a quarterback just yet, unless there's a hidden injury, meaning his neck is really going downhill. What I don't understand is John Fox leaving at this point. I mean, why? Because he didn't win a Super Bowl? It's not like they were kicked out before the playoffs. I don't understand still. I think John Elway decided that maybe the way that John Fox wanted to take the team and the way that Elway wanted to take the team were different. I don't think it's any more or less difficult than that. And John Fox has been around the game long enough where he can probably decide, okay, that's fine. I can go get another job elsewhere. And you know what? He will. And it still looks like all signals pointing to Chicago, who are ready to get somebody that, you know, of his stature. I mean, is he a great coach? I don't know. Is he a good coach? Yeah, I think he's a good coach. Kareem says, back to my Pats. Great fight on Saturday. I totally have a whole different respect for Flacco now. I hope to God we don't have so many injuries in Sunday's game. Yeah, well, I think there'd be a lot that would hope with you, Kareem. Paul says, a good win at the weekend, probably a more enjoyable game for the neutral than for the nervous fan. But the nitpicks for me, the deceit, furor over our offensive schemes that allow the haters another chance to hate and complain about our tactics. Not much we can do about the attitudes of others, but it's frustrating that, once again, haters are given a reason to dismiss our achievements. Well, the haters, Paul, and we really haven't had a chance much to talk about it. I did write about it in the View from Above column on the website today. Fact of the matter is, the NFL says the Patriots lining up like they did in the second half was legal. Going with an unbalanced line, going with ineligible receivers, it's legal. It's up to the other team to pick it up. Therefore, that was on Baltimore. The officials, and I know this because I have the officials' loudspeaker right in my head the whole game, the officials even announced which numbers were eligible. They even said, don't guard 47. Talking about who, man, in particular. Don't defend 47. He's ineligible. They said that. It went out over the public address. So how could the Ravens not know? And anybody who says that the Patriots are, you know, doing these schemes, they're just not paying attention. They're just haters. And what's the saying, Paul? Haters gonna hate. There's no amount of reasoning that you can give them that would cause them to not hate. They're just gonna hate. The second one is the three knees leading to the late punt and Hail Mary attempt. It seemed baffling to me. The Ravens were always going to be able to use their timeout and get the ball back. I can't believe that our sideline misread the clock of the situation, so it must have been intentional. But surely we'd have been better off running the ball and trying to get a few yards or even the game-clinching first down. Yeah. Paul, we've nitpicked on that before this year. I think it was just a couple of weeks ago, and I think that's an outstanding nitpick by you again right now. I would never take a knee and kick the ball back. I think that's ridiculous, putting the ball in the opponent's hand. When you have a chance to control matters yourself by running the ball, do it. Clearly, that shows you how they felt about their run game on Saturday, does it not? Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. On Twitter, Jose says, heart racing game. Me and my beautiful fiance Karina loved it. All is in front of us. Pat's got to be on their A game Sunday. Steve and Colleen says, on Peyton, I would like to see him leave the game with a tip of the cap and save his body. I think that's a general consensus, Steve. Thank you for that. But I have a feeling that's probably the way a lot of folks feel. All right, let's see what we can get in email-wise here. Denica says, longtime Pats fan, I love this show. I understand being confident but completely overlooking an opponent and saying they have zero chance in a playoff game is the wrong way to think. Too many things have a chance to go wrong, especially if the Patriots fail to come out and play with a purpose to start the game. I was disappointed in the defense. I hope they can play well next game. If they can make plays and be aggressive from the start, make key stops, I love the chances of not only beating the Colts but winning it all. I remember thinking the Pats had zero chance to lose a Super Bowl to Eli Manning. Look how that turned out. Pats will win, but I'm sure they're not overlooking the Colts. Good email, Denica. Sean says, like most fans, I think the Patriots and Seahawks will advance to the Super Bowl. Both teams are favored by a touchdown. It'll probably go up. I can see how the Packers, even with an injured Aaron Rodgers, can win in Seattle. Seahawks have an amazing defense and may even be better than last season because their front seven has improved. The one weakness is Simon at corner. In Indy, the Patriots used six offensive linemen and just ran all over the Colts. Do you think New England will go with a similar game plan? Well, they may have to go six just to get a decent one in. And I'm only saying that because of some of the injury problems up front. And the Colts are improved defensively. Talked about that just a little while ago. Speaking of the trickery, as one of our Facebook posters just mentioned, and we hadn't talked much about it today, last I checked, every play, every snap from scrimmage is deception. Unless you walk up to the line of scrimmage on offense and you tell the defense what's coming, you want them guessing, don't you? And you're trying to deceive them, aren't you? Of course you are. To that end, while John Harbaugh in Baltimore may have decided that he wants the NFL to look further into what the Patriots were doing, the NFL, of course, has long since said that what the Patriots did was legal. Chuck Pagano, the Colts head coach, called the league yesterday to try to learn more about what you can and can't do in four offensive line formations. He knows it's legal. He wants to prepare. He's trying to do his due diligence. He's trying to do his homework. I think the Patriots should be given credit for just doing their homework and surprising an opponent that was a little embarrassed that they didn't know anything about it. That's all I'm saying. Steve says, my nit would have to be a head coach from a family of coaches in the case of Harbaugh not being able to lose with class. Even Rex Ryan was able to say we got beat in every aspect of the game following a loss. The other would not. The other would be Edelman, who has a 158.3 quarterback rating, not stepping in sooner for a clearly declining Brady. Come on, man. All number 11 does is toss touchdowns. I like it. Oh, that's good. Keep up the great work, John, and I'm with the rookie. Can OSU give Texas a quarterback? Yeah. I'll take Cardale Jones next year in Austin. Thank you very much. Chad from the ATL. John, is it a coincidence that as soon as Chandler Jones came back, the pass rush has slacked off? I called the PFW guys about it, but they didn't elaborate on it at all. Eric at least agreed with me. I don't want to give up on him, and I know he's coming off an injury, but it seems like he has a hard time setting the edge in every game. Chad, it's hard to disagree with your observation because we've all made the same observation. I don't know that the injury has caused it. I think he, honestly, is trying to make an impact, and sometimes he just tries too hard, and so he forgets about setting the edge, and he forgets about having to defend the run because he's trying to make the big impact play. He's a doubles hitter trying to jack home runs. That's what he's trying to do. That's kind of what I feel. Good observation, though, Chad. Randy in New Orleans. How am I doing, Rook? I'm doing okay. Thank you, Randy, for asking. Yes, Flacco is elevated, but not as much as a lot of people would think. Yes, he was good, but he was also playing a rusty defense who hadn't been playing in 2 weeks. And also, if Revis never got those two penalties, then the score wouldn't have been as close. Well, if my aunt had cojones, she'd be my uncle. I mean, come on. He had the penalties. What are you going to do? Penalties happen. They're a part of the game. Plus, he was easily baked not once but twice into targeting Ryan and getting picked off for eyeing the receiver the whole time. Yes, he's good and he's clutch. This game didn't change my mind of him. As far as Manning, well, I'd give him another year to see if he's done or not. Let's see what he can do with a good bill of health and an off season with another coach. All right. Thank you, Randy, for that. Let's see. Kashif from Jamaica. John, I hope you're enjoying the weather. Wecker. Weather. Hey, Kashif. Bite me. 88 degrees? Come on, man. That's not even fair. Not even fair. Says nitpicks. The obvious ones were stopping the run and not touching Flacco. Forsett ran through us almost at will. I believe if the Ravens just mainly focus on the run game, it could have been a different-looking game. Forsett really looked untouchable thanks to a Ravens offensive line that shouldn't have been that dominant, according to many pundits. The O-line looked like the Great Wall of Dallas at times. We couldn't touch Flacco or stop Forsett enough. We got to step up in the trenches on defense. And another issue is our slow starts at the beginning of games. I noticed for the past four or five games we've had some slow starts, yeah? And five of the last six, they failed to score on the opening drive, and there's a quick way to fix that, Kashif. Take the damn ball. Stop deferring. Okay, that's the only time I mentioned that today. Jack says, don't you only have to report an injury if he's limited in practice? Yes. When the official injury report comes out, which will be tomorrow, yes. I believe that is the case. Says, I think the problem with the pressure or lack thereof is scheme-based more so than a lack of talent. Remember when Ninkovich came on PFW and he said most teams, if you get behind the quarterback, you've done your job. But if you do that here, well, Belichick will lose his mind. Guys aren't allowed to pin their ears back. They have to power rush and keep contain and gap integrity. When you have guys like J.J. Watt, you're okay. When you got guys like Chandler Jones who are 260, sometimes they get overwhelmed at times. It's an interesting point, Jack. That's right. You want a power rush, but you got to contain and keep the gap integrity, and you don't want guys to break you around edge, which kind of happened against Baltimore. So sometimes you're sacrificing that edge rush just for being able to make life a little uncomfortable. So you may not be getting to the quarterback, but, you know, what isn't always seen is that you're causing the quarterback to make a quicker decision than he wants to have to make. Let's see. Just wondering what Brandon Browner's injury was last week. Do you think he'll play in the Colts game? Chris says this. No way to tell, and we'll probably know a little bit more starting tomorrow when the first injury or participation report comes out. Let's see. TG and NJ, since this is the negative show, Patriots played their Super Bowl last week against the Ravens. The O-line is not good. Brady got killed against Baltimore. Colts got momentum now that the torch has been passed from Manning to Luck. All Andrew has to do now is slay the Brady dragon, and the AFC is his to rule. The age of Luck is upon us. Okay. Just being superstitious. Too much Phoenix talk. Pats can lose this game no matter how Paul and Fred argue the percentages. The fans and the media may overlook the Colts. I just hope the players aren't. I don't think there's any chance of that, to be honest with you, TG. Dan in San Antonio. It may be a topic that hasn't had much attention, but what's going on with our situational football before the first half? It's been unpatriot-like. If it's not Brady throwing interceptions or defense having brain farts or what is it? What it is, but almost every game before the first half is over, we make some bumbled play that practically kills us. I wish I had the answer to that one, Dan. Again, I think you got to go. I think there's one quick way. My way to fix it would be to get in an aggressive mindset early. And I'll say it again. Take the damn ball! That is all. Drew in Bowie. John, nitpicks. Brady missing Gronk. If he lofts it, 60-yard touchdown. For a pick just before the half. Pass interference. Hold on. One of our new corners, not Browner, and Butterfingers. Okay, well, yeah, you pretty much hit a lot of the nitpicks from the game, Drew. On the other hand, it was great to see fired up Brady with three big guns, Gronk dominating in key situations, Amendola and Edelman contributing big games and some trickeration back in the mix. There was some good trickeration. The double pass that was thrown from Edelman to Amendola for the 51-yard touchdown, that'll certainly be on every highlight reel to this season. That was an amazing play call, and as much as we bang on Josh McDaniels and the lack of some sense in play calling this year, that was brilliant. Brilliant! It was. Got to give him credit. Gabe in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Besides going through a plethora of cynic something, I can't even pronounce Eric's damn word of the day. Gabe always tries to use it in a sentence. Gabe, I'll give you credit for it anyway. Typed characters here to describe my emotions after watching the game. I'll break it down to two things. can't even pronounce the damn word Eric had today. Harbaugh's inimical reaction to Josh from his sideline and to the refs with the lack of being able to comprehend what was being played out on the field in regards to ineligible and how to properly defend it. The refs basically said, pointing to Vereen, don't cover this guy. How much more simplistic do you need, Mr. Harbaugh? Precisely. I'm glad you heard that, Gabe, because that's exactly what the officials did. When the Ravens had 14 seconds left at the end of the game, my soon-to-be 9-year-old son looked at me and said, no, Dad, it's over. They don't get another chance. No, Dad, no! I almost got very ill with his reaction. Were the Pats celebrating too much to actually figure out that Tom needed to stand around or run back for a few seconds before each kneel down or maybe use a run play there or what? How does that happen? Yeah, that was good. I'm glad we've had a couple of people point that out. That's happened a couple of times this year. You know, it was a little bit early for kneel down. That's all I can tell you. Did I have another one here? I think I got another one here. Hold on. Oh yeah, Tyler just sent me a tweet with a photo of haters gonna hate. Yeah, well, that's what they're gonna do. Haters are gonna hate. Don't know if that's going to continue to happen this week, but I can only assume that that will probably be a part of it this week. Tomorrow in the playbook, we'll start game planning for these Colts. Round two for this season. In November, a 42-20 win for the Patriots at Indianapolis, and that was the game, of course, that Jonas Gray ran for two Bills and sent him on his way, we thought, onto potential stardom, and he got his comeuppance instead. I'm wondering, and I'm sure this is something we'll spend some time discussing, I'm wondering if maybe he doesn't have to enter the equation just because of his good game back in November, or if there's still some sort of penance that he's playing, and whether or not this is really for the betterment of this football team right now. Isn't it all about winning right now? So we'll talk about some of that game plan. We'll talk to some of the folks in the Colts camp, and we're going to talk to you. We want your thoughts. Tomorrow will be hashtag WTF Wednesday. What's the focus Wednesday? Where will the focus be in terms of trying to beat the Colts and get to, yet again, the big game, the Super Bowl? We'll start talking about that tomorrow. AFC Championship is in Foxborough, just like you hoped it would be. More on that as well, right here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.